Good evening, everybody. This is Tira Warner and Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I'm here and you're here because you've been invited to listen in to my personal health consultation. And while some people may not find it terribly interesting to listen to some of these details, I thought it would be a really valuable process to share with you some of the some of what can happen in a health consultation, and also because after 7 years of doing little fruit and vegetable detoxes and health programs and trying to eat a diet of mostly raw foods, I have some persistent health problems, and I want to sort of not just lead by example, but walk the walk that I'm talking and make sure that I'm looking into some of the things that might be coming up for me and making sure that I'm just informing myself on how some of the health issues I have could be developing and what I need to do to take my health in my own hands. So I hope that you find this helpful. Dr. Rita Marie and I are going to pretend you're not here. we can both be comfortable with just being transparent and letting this go with the flow. So we're not here to perform or impress, but really just share with you a process that may be helpful and valuable for you too, and perhaps some of the questions that come up for me might be questions you've had yourself. So we're both very grateful that you've decided to check this out and listen along, and we hope that the process is valuable for you. And, of course, if you do have questions about, you know, how this may apply to you or you'd like information, then we've left some links on the recording page. So you can access Dr. Rita Marie's pages and you can email us, but enjoy the process, and I'm going to now pretend you're not there.
it'll happen naturally after a while. It'll just feel like it's just us. So.
Exactly. Well, and I find some of the best things happen when we're just, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with just being myself. So
yeah.
What I thought we would do is just, I would back off and let you sort of lead me and guide me because I have not really done one of these before.
Okay.
Yeah, so you lead the way.
All right. So first of all, I want to congratulate you for doing a thorough job of filling out your questionnaires, because that really helps me before I even get started. Now, I've known you before, so I know a little bit about you, but in a lot of cases, I'm just meeting with somebody for the first time, and you could spend 3 hours or 4 hours on the phone asking the right questions. So I created this long questionnaire that may seem arduous a little bit for you at the time, or maybe some of the questions don't seem appropriate, and they probably aren't, because it's meant to deal with like a whole gambit of people, not just you. So some of the questions don't make any sense at all in your life, and others make a lot of sense in your life. So I appreciate you filling that out, because it gives me a kind of a picture of where, you know, where things are going to flow. And the way I like to start out is asking you more questions, ha, ha, ha. Just because you filled out all those questions doesn't mean that you get to just sit back and listen to me spew out about what's going on with you, because there's a few other things that I would like to know. So the
Go in before you get started, because I found the process really interesting. First of all, I think before any person, you know, can really make dietary changes, they need to be able to confront where they are at. And I think what's really good about the extensive questionnaire is that I was forced to sit down and actually answer all these questions, which means instead of just having a problem and rushing to find the cure, you actually need to look at all the choices that you're making and confront them. And I think in terms of any transformational program or process that people get into, that's the first step. So I really enjoyed the process and felt surprisingly healthy when I went to the metabolic assessment. I was
absolutely.
All over the place. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And that was, you've got one of the best scores from anybody that I've ever done that on. So congratulations on that. And a lot of people express the same thing you did, is that as they go through the process, it's a very enlightening process, because you're not just asked to look at your habits and your choices, but you're asked to look at your functioning. And you go, wow, I never really paid attention to that before. And when you do, you might notice things that you didn't notice before that are indications that something might be out of balance. So I think it's a good process for us all to go through periodically.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that's really interesting about this is just the fact that part of the problem for me is that I don't have any major health crisis interfering with my well-being or my productivity or my energy or my creativity. So sometimes I lack motivation because I'm like, well, I'm doing good enough. But I want to, for myself, step it up a notch. And I think health and well-being is relative. And so part of this process is, for me, just the importance of investing in my personal health process as a way of motivating me to take the next steps.
Absolutely. And absolutely. And one of the things that you've pointed out to people before is that just because you seem to be functioning pretty well,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that everything is perfect. Because, you know, I got an example I gave in one of the articles on the 6-week detox is that you can have a roof that, you know, it's not leaking. You don't think it's broken. You don't think it's broken. It's a beautiful sunny day. There's no leak, and, you know, there's no water coming into your house. There's nothing wrong with the roof. And then it could have a huge hole in it. And as soon as it rains, boom, it's flooded. And it didn't just break then. It's been broken all along. And it kind of can work that way in your body. So some of the little clues, I think it's a really good idea to pay attention to the little clues that show that things are out of balance, because then you're not waiting for the big flood, you know, and then it's like, oh, my God, I got the big C word, or, you know, I've got arthritis or something. No, you're getting these little clues along the way. And so it's good to do some of the detective work to say, well, what does that mean? And you asked me that, you know, in here, what do these things mean? So before I tell you what some of these things mean in my interpretation, what I'd like to do is ask you a few more questions, if that's okay.
Yes, I will stop talking and start answering.
Okay, so the first thing that you mentioned was this cyst, and you mentioned that there's one on the back of your leg. And is that the right leg or the left leg?
It's on the left leg, and I would say back of the leg, but it's really like almost on what would be the panty line or bikini line.
Okay.
So it's not like on the back of my leg. It's more like just right underneath my bottom at the top.
Okay. So you said the other one was on your cheek, on your face cheek?
Yeah.
So you've got matching cheek cysts.
Oh, wow. Well, the one on my face is significantly smaller than the one on the back of my leg or back of my cheek or whatever you want to say.
Okay.
So, and you probably wouldn't even notice, except that I just kind of feel it. It's like a hard bump. And maybe I'm not even calling it what it's supposed to be, but I had it identified as a cyst by someone else, a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is or why.
Okay. So the one on the back of your leg, about how big is it?
You know, I'm going to – this is so funny. It's – I have some coins beside me, so I don't – it is not as big as a quarter.
Okay.
So – it's not the size of a quarter, not that
big. So is it as big as a nickel or bigger?
Yeah, I think it would be, because it's kind of trickily placed, so it's hard for me to see up there. But yeah,
okay.
It's about all the way around. If I go to the periphery, really, it's about the size of a nickel.
Okay. And then is it raised? I mean, it's obviously raised,
yes.
But how high is it raised? Is it raised like a, just barely? Is it like a quarter?
Do you know, it definitely, when I've done a few days of green juices, it definitely goes down. Right now, it's raised, I would say, between 2 to 3 millimeters.
Okay. And then is it hard all the time? Is it sometimes soft and squishy?
You know what? It almost feels like it has roots or something into my skin. And I think if I were to grab, like, it, you know, it's not just sitting on the surface. Inside and the skin at the base, it feels harder. So there's, like, more going on than just that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Yeah, and if you try to squeeze it, is there any?
No, I don't think it would squeeze. I don't think it's that kind of pimple thing. The layer of skin around it is very thick. I mean, maybe I could poke it with something. But
yeah. Well, oftentimes those have a little. They're hard. I've worked with people with those kinds of cysts, and they're kind of hard around. But then you can almost see a little dot, which would be hard to see where yours is located. But a little tiny dot, and if you squeeze them, they don't secrete all this liquidy goo like you would think of a blister, but it more like this pussy kind of stuff that comes out in like a straight line out, and those are usually filled with, you know, just debris that your body is encasing away. So any kind of cyst like that is some substance that your body's trying to get rid of, and it's encasing it to protect it from spreading around.
But is it something that I should pierce or try and, like, let it go? Because I'm sure that if I took a pin or something, maybe I could, and I could try and look and see if there's a hole, but...
I would probably not pierce it because you're likely to just pierce in a spot that's not doesn't have a channel going into where the encasement is. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a blister where any place you pierce, it's just going to burst open. So I don't know that would be the case, but we can talk about. You can probably put a little bit of like hot compresses on it to see if that brings it down. But I think more it's got to resolve from the inside out rather than from the outside.
Yeah. And I definitely, like, part of the reason that I wanted to address it is because I was reading from on the juice feasting site, it was Bridget Mars, who had done, she used to have a very significant cyst, and she did a juice feast for 90 days, I think, and completely got rid of it. So I noticed, I have not got the discipline yet, well, maybe you could inspire me to do it, but to do a juice feast for 90 days, it's really a lot of work, and I just... Mm-hmm. Haven't been able to pull it off, but I noticed that when I'm consistent with my green juices, it does go down. And if I start dipping into my children's chocolate or some of these things that I've been doing over the holidays, which I generally didn't do before, it acts up again. I feel it gets sort of inflamed.
Right, because it's usually toxic debris. And the ones that I've dealt with where we have actually squeezed them to get the secretions out, it's a really foul smell.
Charming.
Yeah. So it's not stuff. So you want your body to resolve it by having the detoxification capacity from the inside out. So you may not have to do 90 days of juices, but perhaps just being a little bit more consistent. But let's talk about that in a second. How long has it been there?
You know, it has to have been there for about a year now. But I know for sure it was there last summer in August.
So
summer
August
before 08. That, actually. So,
so
it would
maybe
have been
year, close to
a year and
a
half at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And have you ever had anything like that before? Anywhere?
No. Okay. No. I have a very boring health history. Well, mostly boring. Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good to have a boring health history. No surgeries, no medications. That's great. It's wonderful.
That's my wisdom teeth, you know, that came out. But I don't even know if that counts. I guess it does.
You know, it kind of sort of does, but most people have their wisdom teeth out, and it indicates that some developmental stuff, and it's usually when there's not enough space in the mouth for those teeth to form, it's usually as a result of poor nutrition early on.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because I had 8 permanent teeth pulled.
Yeah.
So I did not have enough room in my mouth for all the teeth that I was growing.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's really common, and the size of the palate and all has to do with your nutrition early on, early developmental kind of stuff.
That's so interesting. I wish you'd been there. Prevent me the braces and stuff. Anyway, wow.
Wow. Okay, so that's the one thing. The other, I'm looking at your five. You didn't really have 5 complaints. You had the cyst, and then the herpes outbreak. Which you said you had only had 1 over 15 years, and then all of a sudden you had 4 in the last year.
Yeah.
So
well,
I,
in the last, like, even 8-9 months, so yeah.
8 or 9 months. So
and
I would,
one other thing I noticed, and I don't know if I put it down, is that it seems to be happening just before I get my menstrual cycle.
Okay.
Or right about the same time.
Okay. So right around the same time, like the start of your bleeding, or a few days before that?
Not the start of my bleeding.
Okay.
I don't know what I wrote as my third health thing, but...
I'm flipping back that page right now. It was...
I love that it's on the blog. It's so easy for me to find. Oh, salt cravings and late night eating.
Salt cravings. Okay, yeah. So have you always had salt cravings, or is that a recent onset?
Well, 7-ish years ago when I started doing this raw thing quite heavily, the thing I wanted more than anything else was tomato sauce. So I found I could white-knuckle the cravings if I would eat greens, and I suspect that it goes away when I'm eating, you know, like when I'm doing a lot of green juices, it goes away, but I've had it as long as I've been doing raw food.
And not before that, though?
Not like that. I mean, I don't know if I ever had or even noticed cravings before because I wasn't so focused on trying to eliminate so many things from my diet.
I
tried veganism and macrobiotics and then went back to all kinds of different things because different health practitioners told us we needed this or that. But since being on mostly raw food is when I've noticed more my cravings for specific things because I'm eliminating so many things that I wasn't going for before.
Exactly. And do you remember like having a tendency towards liking chips and crackers?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I love salty foods, but I wasn't an obsessive chip eater or anything like that. I mean, I prefer a salty cracker over a sweet thing, but I won't say no to some sweet things either. My diet's been pretty, like, vegetarian, sort of whole foods healthy for at least 15 years or something like that, you know. Even when I wasn't a raw vegan, I was still aware of gluten-free foods, and I would make all kinds of vegan cakes or just things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you would tend towards more healthy choices rather than the fast food, junk food that's so common.
Yeah. Like, I've never, ever been someone who would binge on, like, Dairy Queen burgers or something, but I don't even know if they make burgers, so I'm just saying that. But I wouldn't go to a Greasy Spoon for a binge, but one of the things I would do is more like salt. Like, I would find my kid's rice cracker thing, and then just like, the next thing I know, it's empty, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So is the salt craving get worse around your period?
No. It's actually, if I crave anything around my period, and it's interesting because I used to get a major fat craving just before my period would strike, so I would just go for the almond butter, or I would eat a bunch of avocados, or I would suddenly need a whole bunch of coconut butter, and then bam, the next day my cycle would start.
Mm-hmm.
But no, my salt cravings are pretty persistent, like any time of the month. And while I've noticed a fat craving just before my cycle, sometimes it's also like I want sweet or things, but I don't notice any premenstrual anything. Like I kind of know it's coming an hour or so before it comes, but otherwise, or my bowels will maybe get a little bit backed up for a day and then suddenly really loose the day that my period comes, but other than that, I have no indication that it's coming.
Okay. Okay, so getting back to the herpes outbreaks, there are certain foods that can trigger herpes outbreaks, and one is chocolate. And I remember you mentioning that you kind of started dipping into chocolate more frequently. Has that been something that's happened over the last 8 months?
Well, yeah, you know, and one of the things I think I wrote to you is just I want to be freed from the, I don't know exactly what I called it, but even me, I fall so prey to the marketing dogma and just excessive back and forth that's out there in information. So I'll watch like a snippet of a video where David Wolf is talking about magnesium and antioxidants and chocolate, until I'm like, well, it can't be that bad. So I'll get into trying it, and I've partnered up with a raw food restaurant here, and they just have chocolate all the time, and then start to play with it. And so, yes, definitely in the last 8 months, chocolate has gone up.
Okay. Yeah, because that could trigger herpes outbreaks, because it upsets the balance between two amino acids. One's called arginine and one's called lysine. And when you get too much arginine and not enough lysine, you'll get herpes outbreaks. And so it's shifting that balance. Nuts also have that. And one of the things, you know, I don't know if you do that, but some people will take the almond butter and put the chocolate in the almond butter, and that gives you the double whammy of the high arginine foods.
Wow. So in general, do you suggest that people stay away from chocolate?
Well, yeah, I hear you on the back and forth, like, you know, David Wolf going wow, 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 and other people going, you know, it's like the worst thing you could ever do. And I think I kind of fall somewhere in the, you know, it's, I don't believe it's a superfood, but I believe it's a treat food. And so, you know, I'll still have it occasionally, but I notice that it can be addictive. You know, it's like, oh, let me have more, let me have more. So I just, you know, use it as a small, and I got into it a little bit too much over the Christmas break. That was my one indulgence over the break. And, you know, it's real easy to get caught up in it. So does it have a lot of magnesium? Sure. Do greens have a lot of magnesium? Definitely. You know,
yeah,
so there's lots of other ways to get the antioxidants. And they do all this comparison, so you think that the chocolate is so great because it has this many ORACs, and, you know, but you'd have to eat the whole bag to get that. You know, it's better than blueberries or whatever. So I just prefer to go towards the whole fresh foods. But yeah, it's a treat, and to completely deprive yourself of all treats leads to, you know, closet binging, and that's not good either.
And it's interesting, though, too, that I have found sometimes when it does affect sort of my, you know, like I do think it has an effect on my heartbeat. I think it has an effect on, it is a stimulant in a way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, in a big way, yeah. Yeah, so it would, it can elevate your heart rate, you know, increase your heart rate, raise your blood pressure. Yeah. So, but it can, it, the big thing is it can trigger herpes outbreaks. The other thing that, you know, herpes is a virus. And I remember you speaking around, I think it was in the early part of the winter, maybe, or maybe a late part of the fall, around the holidays in November, October, that you were having some trouble with shaking a virus.
Yeah.
And you had some immune stuff going on.
Well, I am, just a second, I need to, I know that when I told you about that, it was like at the beginning of the year, the September-ish or something, when all the A1N1 extravaganza was happening, H1N1 or whatever, and so the flus and sniffles were going around, and I had one that lasted about 6 weeks. I just couldn't shake it.
Yeah, so what I'm getting is that your immune system's a little bit down. So you've got
the
cysts.
Yeah, that was another thing, too, because I never used to catch things that easily, and I contacted you earlier this year. My kids were having lice, and I could get it out of them, but I just couldn't get it out of myself, so I decided to do one of the conventional treatments, and I just had such an intense reaction to it.
Right.
So that was another thing you suggested as an indication that my immune system is down.
Right, and then your detoxification pathways are not quite where they need to be. So the other thing, and I'm going to throw this out there, is you don't show, like I said, a lot of signs in any areas, but there's several signs that show up in the adrenal thyroid kind of area. One, the intense salt craving can be an indication of low adrenals, that your adrenals are getting burned out. And, you know, given being a single mom and entrepreneur and working really hard, it could be easy to see that your adrenals would get whacked out.
Okay. So can I just ask you a question then? So
Adrenals
are going to get whacked out by stress, by lack of sleep?
Yes, 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 right.
Okay.
All of
anything
those things.
Anything else?
Well, mainly stress, and it could be a physical stress or psychological stress. It could be overwork, you know, worrying about where the next dollar is coming from, or worrying about making sure that the five projects that you're juggling at the same time all get you know, the attention that they need to get. And, you know, are your kids, you know, getting what they need? And, you know, if they've got some health challenges, then there's all kinds of stuff that you may on the surface feel like, oh, life is great. But there may be some things that are eating away at you on the inside. And, it can be physical stuff as well. So one of the things I wanted to throw out was it's really a common hidden source of immune system stress is antibodies. We talked a lot about leaky gut when we were doing the telecalls for the detox. And leaky gut leads to food allergies. And food allergies can lead to autoimmune disease. So even if you're only dipping into these, you know, the little cookies here and there, if you have a gluten intolerance, which you mentioned that your son does,
well, no, he has a serious gluten addiction.
Addiction, which is the same thing. It's an addiction because it's an intolerance, usually. It's an addiction because because it's having an adverse effect on his body, and it's causing an endorphin surge as a result. So it causes a stress on the body. So it's possible that you do have a gluten. So you mentioned that if you have gluten, if you have much of it, you do have a bad reaction. But what I want to mention is that, go ahead, finish.
No, I'm listening.
What I want to mention is even if you have a bad reaction to, you know, if you sit down and eat a couple pieces of bread, you're going to feel addicted, number one, and probably sluggish and yucky afterwards. So you don't choose to do that. If you choose to just have, oh, a little bite of this cookie or a bite of that bread there, just to get your, like you say, you're getting your fingers into it, even though it's not enough to trigger you to have the reaction overtly and feel yucky, mm-hmm. right away, it's triggering, it can be triggering, if this is going on for you, an immune response, which is causing inflammation, which is diverting your body's attention from, you know, keeping your adrenals strong, healing that cyst, keeping the herpes outbreak under control. It's diverting it to dealing with this attack, basically. Hmm. And they've found that one exposure to something like gluten or dairy or something that you have that kind of a reaction to can take 8 months, 6 to 8 months, to settle down again.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, and I know you're seriously the glutenator, and I know we're trying to forget other people are listening, but you have a lot of information about gluten, and you and I did a teleseminar,
mm-hmm.
So where you talked all about it, and I think anyone could just Google the Rodivas and gluten and Dr. Rita Marie and find it, because that was a really helpful call. But I guess one of the things that I come back to, and I hear you saying this stuff, but I come back to the fact that you kind of have to tell me in this, like, threatening way or something, okay, listen, because you're doing X, this is what it's doing, but because I don't live immediately, if I
right.
can eat gluten and feel like crap, like some people will break the rules, quote-unquote rules, and have such an immediate and aggressive reaction to something that the motivation not to do it is really high.
It's high.
For me, I feel kind of crabby, you know, like I'm a little bit crusty with my boyfriend, and I'm not as patient with my kids, and I lose that blissful glow, but I, you know, and I hear
okay,
what you're
before
saying,
you say but, before you say but, because but is going to negate everything you just said, and what you just said is super, super important.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I just feel a little crabby. I just get impatient with my kids. I just get crabby with my boyfriend, and I lose the blissful glow. And as you were saying that, my whole body contracted.
Mm.
It was like, whoa, just? That's a just?
Yeah.
That's a reaction. I mean, just to lose your blissful glow, to get crabby?
Yeah. It's so relative. When you hear other people talking about the intense reactions that they have, and I know when I wrote to you this, what are the things holding me back? It's the whole raw mom cooked dad scenario where the fact that I'm now spending so much of my time with someone who is about as interested in raw foods as I am carpentry is just really challenging because he appears to eat everything and anything and feel and look amazing, and it's so hard to be convinced about the value of my extremist ideas when I'm surrounded by that kind of a thing, you know? So,
well, here's what I've been telling people, because I have recently just started to test everybody for gluten and for not gluten antibodies, thyroid antibodies, as a mm-hmm. part of a routine screen. Whereas before it would be like, well, you got to see if the other tests come back negative or borderline. No, I've been testing and I've been finding quite a number of people coming back where their doctors go, no, you don't have a thyroid problem. I don't know why you're tired, and I don't know why you are cold, or I don't know why you have dry skin or thin hair, and they do have a thyroid problem. But it
hasn't. That's related to gluten.
Mm-hmm. And when you get off of the gluten, the antibodies from the gluten stop attacking the thyroid. Now, there's other things that need to be done, depending on how serious it is. But in your case, that might be enough. But there's one other thing that's really clear to me. I cannot imagine that you do not have a vitamin D deficiency living up in Montreal.
Yeah, I'm sure that I do. And mm-hmm. I have a package in front of me. The only supplement I've bought, I'm going to take one right now. The only supplement I've bought in the last, well, however many years, is this vitamin D supplement. And I guess it's a package of 60 tablets, and I've taken 4 in the last 6 weeks. I don't know why.
And how much is in each tablet?
1,000 units of vitamin D.
1,000 units. And that may be barely a drop in the bucket if you have a severe deficiency, and if you're borderline, that would be sufficient.
So how many should a person like me take?
Well, let me ask you this. Are you open to getting some testing done if you really want to know what's going on in your body? Just get some blood drawn and see what your vitamin D status is and see if you have any thyroid antibodies and just see in general what's going on in your body.
Yeah, is that something that I can do locally or I need to do it long distance?
Well, you'd have to do it locally. Here in the States, there's a lab called Direct Labs where people could just order it online and go in there. And unless you live near the border in Canada and can travel across into the States to get the blood drawn, you'd have to go to, you know, your whatever, how your health care practitioner, how you have national health care, so however that works.
Yeah, but, you know, here I am again. I'm so lazy. Like, it's been years. My health care card expired, and I'm just like, eh, I don't need it. I've got Dr. Marie.
Well, the testing is really, and you don't have to do it, but you, if you're just taking 1,000 units a day and your levels are really low, it's just going to barely creep it up. And the thing with the vitamin D is it's important for healing leaky gut. It's important for neurotransmitters. It's important for the thyroid. It's important for lots of different, for depression. It's important for preventing cancer. They've found that people with lower than 50 in their blood have a much, much higher incidence of cervical and breast cancer. So, and it's not to scare you or anything, but it's just to say, you know, you're living in a very northern climate where probably 6 months out of the year, even if you were to lay naked out in the street all day long, you couldn't get any vitamin D. Because the sun is just not at an angle where you can absorb those rays. Yeah. You're just too far north. So, you know, people that live in the tropics, you know, no big deal. But even people here, I live in Texas, and except for this year when we're having freezing cold weather, usually it's pretty warm all winter long, and we're out there in short sleeves and shorts throughout the winter. And even here, I'm noticing that people are low.
Well, I believe it, and my instinct told me that. I bought these little vitamin D tablets when I kept getting cold. I was like, something's wrong. So I definitely suspect that I have a deficiency, and I'm happy taking it. Can I hurt myself by taking too much?
You could if you took really large doses. If you were to take, say, I don't know, 10,000 for a week or two and then drop it down to 2,000 to 4,000, you could be fine. You may not be completely resolving your deficiency, but you could definitely put a dent in it. But taking just 1,000 may not be doing you any good at all.
So I guess what I want to know is I want to be realistic. So I'm going to put on my list, like, renew my health care card, but that's been on my list for 2 years, and I haven't done it. So, but I could motivate myself to do probably vitamin D, especially because starting this week, you know, we're preparing for the 6-week deep tissue detox. So I'm stepping up my discipline to take these supplements and put myself through the process of, like you said, clearing up my detoxification pathways and doing what I need to, you know, it's not because I need to be in bliss all the time, but I'm supposed to be inspiring people to help them achieve the level of health they want. And so for myself, I need to keep raising the bar. You know, there's just like the idea that if you're not improving things, you're deteriorating. And I think it's true. If I see, if I'm not continually working in my own health to improve my health, there's no flat line. You'll just sort of start to deteriorate. And so I think this cyst is a sign. And the fact that I kept catching colds when the kids had those things going on and then those headaches, I want to do what's necessary to be preventative and, well, bliss is okay, but I don't mind keeping 2 feet on the ground.
Well, the other thing that I see, too, is you may, the dry skin. Now, you tell me about the bumps on the back of your arm. You mentioned rosacea. Is that the bumps on the back of your arm? And it's not. Rosacea is on your cheeks, but on your face cheeks. But tell me about the bumps on the back of your arms.
I've had them all my life. My mom has them. My brother has them. I'm sure you've seen them. They used to be on the sides of my thighs and on my bottom and the backs of my arms, and they're actually much better, and I'm trying to find out what, because I've been a little bit more cheating, but I've been less disciplined than I usually am since the holidays, going back home and stuff like that. Once the boundaries are broken, then it's just kind of, anyway, so I've probably been eating, I don't want to say worse than I usually do, but there's been more dipping and snacking than I would have had before, but yet the bumps on the back of my arms have improved a bit. And one thing that I've been pretty good about is enemas, and just better about making sure that I've got elimination going right. So I think that's one thing that helps. But I know that it tends to be food sensitive, so I wonder if how nuts will affect it sometimes. Definitely if I'm increasing my nuts, then I'll get more of those little bumps. And, yeah, I don't know. Do they have a name?
Well, I typically refer to them as hyperfollicular keratosis, you ask.
Say that 5 times really fast.
Hyperfollicular keratosis, yeah, I have a hard time saying it 5 times fast. But you did ask. But, and oftentimes it's related to fat. And it may be that you're having some difficulties. There were a couple of the questions that you answered in the biliary. Let me look that up. The fat, the liver gallbladder section of the metabolic assessment. Let me go back to that. There were very few of them that you had. You have very stable blood sugar, which is good. And
when I was pregnant and before I went to raw foods, I really had a lot of yeast infections, like very high levels of yeast. But that seemed to handle itself by the whole 80-10-10 thing was my first raw food pass. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I eliminated fat, it was handled in just about 3 days or something.
Yeah.
I was eating a lot of fruit, but almost no fat.
Yeah. And what about, do you make an effort to get your like, omega-3s, hemp seeds,
nope,
or chia seeds or anything like that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, you might be low in those, and that's something we're going to focus on during the 6-week detox, is to make sure that you're getting sufficient quantities of those on a regular basis. And that doesn't mean you have to go to a high-fat diet. Certainly not. You don't need very much, you know, 3 to 6 tablespoons of the whole seeds. That's not the oil. That's, you know, maybe a couple hundred calories, which is less than 10% or about 10%. of your daily.
You know, and I think what happens is I'll hear someone say something, like I heard someone saying, a doctor you and I both know, saying that the whole omega-3 fatty acid thing wasn't really true. And so sometimes I'll just hear something someone else says, and I don't know if I'm more of a conformist than I thought, but I just immediately adopt someone else's idea about food and need to. And that's how come, you know, I said the reason I want to do this 6-week detox too is because I really want to inform myself about the basic body system, so that I'm not just making decisions because someone else said something, but because I understand how body systems work and how X, Y, and Z affect what's going on in the body. You know what I mean?
Right. And then how you feel from it. So
yeah.
from a you know, textbook standpoint, someone may make a statement, oh, I think this whole omega-3 is overstated, and you know, maybe so, saying that everybody needs to be on fish oils. But the kinds of changes I've seen with people, I mean, some people just, you know, giving their kids some flax oil or flax seed will clear up some of that stuff in the backs of the arms.
But isn't flaxseed a little bit controversial, too?
Yeah, flaxseed is controversial. My favorite source is chia seed and hemp seed. Those are my two favorite sources, and pumpkin seed, because pumpkin seed's really good has good amounts of zinc, which supports your endocrine system and, you know, gives you and it supports just about everything. Zinc is a cofactor for about 80 different enzymes in the body. So zinc is, like, universally good. So pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, and hemp seeds are my three favorites. I really kind of, you know, shy away from flax because of controversy, and I've had a lot of patients who they get real irritated with. So if you have any degree of irritable bowel or inflammatory bowel, the flax seeds can really aggravate it. And plus there's the whole estrogen thing, which we don't have to, you know, get into either.
Yeah.
So I think the fats might be an issue for you, that you're either not getting enough or not absorbing them very well. And that might be why when you got off of them completely, your yeast cleared up, because it took away this stress on your immune system of these undigested fats getting into your system.
So interesting. Everybody else has a different perspective on why or what or how. And like you said, you know, I remember, and I wrote this in my blog post too, people... You know, I used to listen to, when I first started out, I was really on this fruit path and the 80-10-10, and I was very active with sports and things like that. And I was heavily, heavily advised not to do enemas or colonics, but man, you'd have to wrestle me to my grave to get rid of my enema bag. Like, I really believe in it. And
how often do you do them?
Well, maybe more often than I need to, but depends on how I'm feeling and what I'm eating. And right now, it's more than I need to. So, like, once a week or something.
And if you're not doing them, how often do you get bowel movements?
That I'm definitely not like you, three times a day. But, you know, the thing that affects my bowel movements the most is getting sufficient water and sleep. So.
Okay, you're going to direct you to read a paper I just put up on the six-week detox site about optimizing your elimination and what healthy elimination should look like and how frequently, and kind of going through the physiology of elimination and why three times a day is a number that's thrown out, because if you eat three times a day, you should have bowel movements three times a day.
But using enemas as a way of promoting bowel movements three times a day isn't necessarily healthy as a long-term pattern either.
Exactly. I think enemas are great for occasional use. I think they're great during detoxes, especially if you've cut back, especially if you're doing, say, a juice cleanse where there's no fiber going through to push everything out, then the enemas or colonics are really helpful. And certainly if you're doing a cleanse and you start to get a detox headache, you can clear out a detox headache. I don't know if you've had that experience. Within 10 or 15 minutes, just by evacuating your bowel through an enema. So they're very useful, but I think that you do run the risk of becoming dependent. And then your bowels get kind of lazy, like anything else, right? Any other part of you. If you give it too much help, you're not really helping it anymore.
Isn't that the same with like intestinal movement formulas and things like that?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think their only place is really during a cleanse. The idea is to move things out of you to get you to the point where you don't need them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's backed up sludge, and you should be able to maintain it. But, you know, the truth of the matter is we all go through some kind of phase where we're not maybe not eating as ideally or resting as ideally as we should. And and then the elimination gets sluggish. Things get backed up, and it is a good idea to get it out of you. You know, toxins need to be out, not in there getting reabsorbed.
Okay. So keep going.
Yeah, so those are the main things I see for you. You probably, let me see, you probably have some paired immune system. It may be related to the dips into things like gluten. Do you get into dairy at all when you do those?
I hadn't been for many, many years, but it started slipping in a little bit over the holidays.
Yeah. So those are kinds of things that, but the gluten you dipped into with kids' crackers or things like that, or is that just really over the holidays and not?
It's mostly over the holidays, but sometimes one of the things that will get me, I think I wrote it down, is veggie pate, and it's mostly made with a base of, I think, eggplant and stuff, but I know that there is a little bit of gluten in it.
Okay.
But the thing is, too, the dipping over the holidays is, I was going to say the health issues that I want to address existed before the
before
dipping.
Before that, right. That's what I'm trying to clarify.
I'm sure that there's something about my long-term eating habits, not just the dipping, because I've done juice cleanses, and I know I can clean it up. And I've always been 85-90% raw, so I've always had, like, the rice cakes and rice crackers sneaking in there, and after 7 years, no, I'm not at the 100% mark, and maybe I can get there. You know, that's kind of what the six-week detox is sort of motivating me to do. But I just want to observe the process and at least be making choices that I know are ultimately healthy ones for me, so that it's one thing to choose a food, but I want to choose it because it's the food I really want and because it helps my body to thrive, not because I have a sort of compulsive craving for it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I want to make a statement that may be, you know, controversial in light of, you know, a lot of people on passionate about a raw foods diet. And I'll preface it with, I've been eating, you know, I don't eat cooked food. I mean, I don't knowingly eat cooked food at all. And mm-hmm. but when somebody's striving for this 100% raw,
mm-hmm.
it's just so much pressure. And usually what happens is it just goes so long and then you break. And then you go mm-hmm. on this little tirade, or you go off of it and then you get back on it. As opposed to, I'd rather see you make a commitment to 100% healthy rather
exactly.
than 100% raw. And what that means is if you get into stuff that's not, you know, if you want to keep your diet at 80 to 90% raw and 10 to 20% cooked, that's fine. It just depends on what that other percentage is.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, because I'm pretty informed clientele. I mean, I've been at this 80, 90% thing for 7 years. And so
yeah.
for me, I can't have this, well, you know, I'm 80, 90% thing as an excuse for not stepping up the bar on my own health process. And that's how come, you know, most of the people that we counsel or coach, we're not trying to preach a raw diet at all, not
yeah.
even a little bit. We're trying to preach a healthy diet. But that 20% or that 10% that I'm taking, it because I can't not do it. It's just
exactly.
Like it's
exactly. You're not doing it from choice.
No.
You're not
doing it because it's like, oh,
exactly.
please, I want to feel that salt.
Exactly.
In my
You're
veins.
Doing it to give yourself an out. Whereas if you say, you know, I'm 80% raw, maybe some days 90 or 100, but I choose to eat cooked vegetable soups in the wintertime because I live in Montreal and I need warmth and I want to eat more vegetables
yeah.
than I would. And I don't
yeah,
like broccoli or kale when it's raw, but if I lightly steam it, you know, and sprinkle some garlic on it, I love it. And it's
and
delicious and
me.
It's nourishing and I just want to eat a whole big bowl of it. And
no
I say,
way.
Go
the
for
only
it.
Way- Yeah, the only way I'd be eating a whole big bowl of it is if it's smothered in some kind of salty broth. No way.
Well,
I'm not
you
doing
can
it.
Put
and
a miso
done...
broth on it.
Yeah,
a
well,
chickpea
but...
miso broth that's not soy-based.
Well, and that's fine. I guess, and one of the part of this thing I wanted to clear up, too, is that I feel like I'm operating with indoctrination. And so any person needs to find their healthcare practitioner of choice. And I think one of the things that happens is people try and ride too many horses at the same time. Mm-hmm. They're listening to David Wolf. They're listening to Doug Graham. They're listening to Rita Marie. They're listening to whoever else. And they're trying to follow everybody. And I think, you know, you need to listen to the information that's out there and find it and then ride a wave. And one of the things that's just constantly racing in the back of my mind are nasty things that other people have said about eating salt. So I'm running with this sort of compulsion towards something that I think I'm not supposed to have.
Yeah.
And I need to understand, okay, well, what is salt doing in my body, and is it such a bad thing after all? And if it is, how do I, you know, like I just need to find out, because so many people will say, well, maybe it's not such a bad thing in nature. Animals will go find salt.
They will
salt
go find
mineral.
Salt. And I believe that if you're having salt cravings now, since going on a raw diet, it's mm-hmm. because you created some kind of imbalance. Because if you didn't have the craving before, you were satisfying a need. And if your adrenals are zonked, they are secreting all your salts. And your body's going to replenish, replenish, replenish. So
yeah.
maybe what you can try is, let's pick a period of time that feels safe, like a month or 2 months, where you're allowed to salt your vegetables, and you're allowed to salt your stuff with whole, like a Himalayan or a pink salt, or something that's a whole unprocessed salt, and also sea vegetables, because I notice you don't do much in the way of sea vegetables,
mm-hmm.
that you get those in you. You also don't do much, you didn't check anything anyway in the way of the brassica vegetables, the broccoli, cauliflower, kale, because you probably...
I could be, but they're just not coming in...
They're not coming in because you're trying to do raw.
Hmm.
So I'm just saying, if you're comfortable with 90%, I would say make it a conscious 90%. That 90% is raw, well balanced, high green, raw.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other 10%, you're just going to go, you know, gung ho on getting as many steamed vegetables as you can into you. Green kale and broccoli, and smother it in Himalayan salt, and just see how it goes. And just allow yourself to do that for a couple of months.
You said smother.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really? Like, not? I should not be restricting my Himalayan sea salt?
We're going to see. I want you to experiment on your own body. Because
okay.
if you do that for 2 months, and all of a sudden you're going, ew, I don't really want salt on that. Then you've replenished what you needed to. You've created balance.
So it's so interesting because it really follows the whole what you resist persists philosophy. And I know that the whole time I'm like reaching for these salts, it's because in the back of my mind is all this 80-10-10 stuff about salt is bad. Don't take salt. No, salt is bad. So as soon as you say to me, well, just smother your food in Himalayan sea salt, I'm like, but I don't want to.
Okay.
It's amazing. No, and I will, and I'll definitely try it, but I just see how so, and this is what I love doing what we do, and I love the team that we are, because you really understand the physical stuff, and I love looking at how the mind plays into it all, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in the back of my mind, every time I'm reaching for salt is this idea that I'm not supposed to be doing that. But as soon as you sort of give me permission, then the compulsion just totally vanishes.
Yeah. And I want you to give yourself that permission because you need to give yourself that permission. Because what's causing you, what the no, this is bad is causing you to do is then gravitate towards the rice cakes and the other stuff that's like, you know, it's not really giving you any nourishment. So allow yourself to satisfy your salt craving by making a nice soup with lots of vegetables in it and salt it.
Okay.
And throw some sea vegetables in there too. So throw some, you know, kelp powder or something like that too. Those are salty.
Okay.
And then just see how it goes. Do an experiment. Whatever those negative even if all that is absolutely true, it's not going to kill you in 2 months.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Right. So just experiment with it for 2 months. It's way better than the chocolate addiction, right? You know, then reaching for the chocolate because that you have to have sweet with the chocolate. You can't just, unless you're just sitting there eating cocoa beans whole and raw.
So interesting. One of the things I wanted to do, too, is just check and see if there were any questions coming in. And I know we said we're just going to pretend it's us, but I can't help admitting that I invited 30,000 people to listen. So I wanted to just check and see some of the comments that were coming in. And I know lots of other people are going through the same thing that I am. And here's another thing that I mentioned to you as a major concern for me. And I want to know how it ties in with adrenals or salt or whatever. But now these are juicy details that I was only going to leave on the call. So late night eating is something that really gets me. Like, it's so intense. I've actually had nights where I wake up in the night and walk to the counter or the cupboard and almost can completely eat something in my sleep and then wake up the morning and be like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I did that last night. So I don't know what, you know, but apparently, and I was looking at some of the comments, I'm not the only one who struggles with late night binging. And one of the things that I've noticed is often I will start to doze off and fall asleep. And then what I do is it's almost automatic. It's like my body is stronger than my mind. I get up and I go to eat as if to stimulate me or keep me awake or something like that.
Well,
but I don't want us to end this call without talking about late night binging
or eating
habits.
Let me talk about that because that's a habit to break. Now, a number of things can contribute to that. One is you've deprived yourself too much during the day. And when I say deprived yourself, it's either of proper nourishment or proper pleasure, proper rest, proper exercise. There's something that's missing, and your body's reaching for, you know, filling that hole with the food. Right. The other thing is, you know, you have to stay up another 2 or 3 hours because you've got something going, and the only way you're going to do it is to stimulate yourself. Right. The other thing is, if, like, sometimes I'll eat at midnight, but I then won't go to bed till 3. So I still keep to my rule of don't eat within 3 hours of going to bed. So if I suddenly get an urge, you know, for something at midnight, I evaluate, how much later am I going to be up?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm planning to go to bed within a half an hour, I just, like, bite my fingernails and avoid it. The other thing I'll mention is this is something from Ayurvedic medicine. And they talk about the cycle, similar to Chinese medicine, where the body goes into different cycles of where you're more efficient at certain things. And your body is most efficient at digesting between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. and between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. That's its high metabolic activity. So what it means is you should be having your biggest meal of the day between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. And then between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., you should be sleeping, because it will turn that metabolic energy inward and clean house, do all the detoxification. So in Ayurvedic medicine, they say as soon as you step past 10 o'clock, the food cravings are going to start. It's just a physiologic process. So it's not a weakness. It's not something bad. It's not something missing in your character. What's that?
It's not like a parasite or something?
Well, it's because your body kicks into that gear of digestion, of really being efficient at digestion. And so it's like, okay, bring on the fuel. Bring on the food. Now, parasites can cause that, and blood sugar imbalances. When people wake up in the middle of the night and can't get back to sleep unless they eat something, that's usually because their blood sugar has plummeted. And oftentimes the blood sugar will plummet as a result of some kind of cortisol imbalance, which is the hormone secreted by the adrenals. So the cortisol levels will shoot up. Sometimes people who have a history of having been molested or sexually abused as a child, that happen during the night, and so they can't sleep. Their body goes into alert mode at those hours, so they wake up, and they're secreting all this cortisol, and their blood sugars dip, and they're needing to they're secreting or they could be secreting the cortisol because the blood sugar dipped. So it goes either way.
Interesting. I do have that history. I have a history of sexual abuse that happened in the night, but mm-hmm. I don't ever wake myself up in the night.
You don't
and
wake
it's
yourself
interesting,
up.
What like, do you mean I by don't
you
wake
don't,
up. I mean, I guess
usually.
I do wake up. Sorry. we're
well,
we're
I've
on,
had
we're
you
on,
up at 3. I've talked to you on Skype at 3 a.m., so.
No, but I just mean, like, if I wake up, and it's happened a few times, but it's not that I wake up and I can't sleep. If I get up to eat, it's almost as though I am still sleeping.
Like you're sleepwalking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if I pass out and sleep, I'm out for the count.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wake up, it's because I want to get to work, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So you'll sleep, you said, you know, somewhere between 5 and 7 hours before.
Yeah, usually. Now. Yeah. It wasn't always like that, but.
Right.
And it's interesting what you said about feeding a need, like I'm not feeding myself somehow during the day, but I definitely don't get the late night eating cravings if I'm with my boyfriend. It only happens when I'm by myself.
So there you go. There's some loneliness or just some lack of companionship, or just, you know, you're more fulfilled when you're with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need the food. You've got the pleasure of the relationship and the connection.
Mm-hmm.
So you can look at that.
Go to bed.
With that? And more incentive
to go to bed.
Yeah. But, you know, an interesting thing you can do with those cravings, and this is, you know, true of any kind of emotional eating, is to stop yourself and go, wait a minute, what do I really need here? What would soothe this emotional need right now? Because
mm-hmm.
it's really a need, it's an emotional need. And rather than eating to soothe an emotional need, why don't you do something emotional to soothe the emotional need, or something that provides pleasure?
Because usually I'm trying to write a sales page.
Yeah, exactly. And you're trying to keep yourself awake through it. Exactly. So you're not doing something that's pleasurable. And if you stop to do something pleasurable, you may not get your work done. So, yeah, it's a very common pattern. And just getting back to the adrenal stuff, you could have a great life now and really low stress and all this, but that early abuse, that early stress on your system can be
mm-hmm.
playing itself out and can have created imbalances that you're still living.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you said that, and I totally understand why it would be. And I think lots of things are happening on levels that we don't necessarily perceive consciously.
Right. Absolutely. And there are some herbs and things you can try to take if you want to try to rebalance that.
Like adrenal boosting herbs or what kind of herbs?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, we've sort of gone over the cyst. I mean, what I wanted to know, too, is basically what to do. So I would love to have,
Let's give you a summary.
Me a series of action steps and actually a program and some accountability. So one of the things that I'm committed to doing is the 6-week detox. But if there's a way that I need to adjust it or customize it or other things that I need to do, I want us to try and get rid of this cyst.
Okay.
And if you suggest that I should try doing a green juice feast or something like that, the motivation of doctor's orders would probably be enough for me to get disciplined about doing something. But I need you to be like, pull out the, crack the whip on me a little bit and actually give me that kind of like, I'm telling you, you need to do this, because that would be motivating for me.
Well, if you want to do all the way through the 6-week detox doing green juices, that could go a really long way with healing that cyst.
Do you mean only green juices?
Well, yeah.
Yeah? No, that's fine. I'm just trying to understand.
But it doesn't have to be only green juices, but it could be green juices, green smoothies.
But was there,
Say that again?
Is there anything wrong with doing just green juices?
Well, the only thing would be, I know on the green, the juice feast, that the actual juice feast that they have the website for, that there's some extra stuff that you're taking to get your fat needs met. So my concern, if you were to just go 6 weeks with just green juices, is that I think you're already fat depleted, and you would get more fat depleted. So it might be green juices with, you know, a psyllium drink. And what I would recommend that you do in order for us to customize the 6-week detox is go through the process that everybody's going to go through. There's some forms to help you get numbers in different categories and look down and, you know, choose. And it may be helpful for you to do that.
I did do that today.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And that's okay. I know that I prefer whole food solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I prefer the idea of juicing and taking herbs, and I do like the idea of, you know, some of the green supplements or things like that just to maybe help me. But if you think that I could do should try a green juice, and you suggested maybe smoothies too, but I find I'm less and less attracted to fruit. So one of the things I hear people doing on these juice feasts is fruit juices, and I just don't like that.
No.
Yeah, I don't feel good making fruit juices, and I understand it's a way of getting calories, but I guess what I would want is just some specific guidance to say, okay, for the next 6 weeks, here's what I want you to do.
Okay, well, for the next 6 weeks, I would say follow the option 3 plan,
mm-hmm.
the menu plan that's in option 3, which will have you do, and you can do as many days as you want each week of the liquid only, but each of the plans is going to have week one day of liquid only. Week two days of liquid only, you know, building it up towards the end. And then very specific guidelines for having at least 2 to 3 quarts of green juice, and you can have salads along with that. So there's, you know, just read through the option 3, which is the food and herbs only piece.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have it all memorized because all start to blend together and I'd have to sit down with it. But and we could go over it again, is to really follow through on that 3, which would mean, you know, getting access to some wheatgrass, or if you can't get fresh wheatgrass, you can get frozen wheatgrass.
I can.
Yeah, you can get fresh. Yeah, because you're access to the restaurant. So yeah, so getting some fresh wheatgrass, you know, a couple 2 to 4 ounces a day. Start small. Start with just 1 ounce a day, and then gradually increase it. And then follow. There's a whole protocol. Like if you score this on the colon piece, or if you score this on this piece, add this particular herb,
mm-hmm.
and really take a look at as you go through the 6-week detox materials. There's a whole set of herbs that support the gut healing phase. And there's a whole set of foods and herbs. You know, they're common. I didn't put a lot of the real weird. I left the weird stuff out because I wanted it to be common kind of household herbs and spices that people could get access to, and foods, and really concentrate on those.
You know, we're not looking at just celery juice. We're looking at getting the broccoli and the broccoli sprouts and kale and cabbage and some of those other things in there, as well as daikon and, you know, there's a whole list of herbs, and you can, you know, just kind of pick and choose from it, like go to the grocery store with that list in hand and say, oh, they have some turnip and daikon, and, oh, I could juice those into my stuff, and, oh, there's some dill and there's some oregano, and great, those will be great in my juices.
Okay. So for the next 6 weeks, but actually 8 weeks, because we have a preparatory week and sort of a down week. So for me, you're suggesting that I can actually do all juices and green smoothies if I want to.
Mm-hmm. And salads if you want to. But do at least the number of days a week that we're recommending in the six-week detox of liquid only. And do those as juice. Do those as just juice.
Okay. And anything else specifically related to making the cyst disappear?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. One is I definitely think you should get on that vitamin D.
Okay. Can we give me, like, a suggested dose for someone who's not likely to organize herself enough to get actually tested?
Right. I'm going to say.
Let's assume I'm running on a deficiency because I just have not had enough sun, and I suspect I have one.
Absolutely. Can I give you a dose that you'll follow for 2 weeks and then you'll taper
off
and change it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
10,000 units a day for 2 weeks. And when your tablets are done, I want you to get a liquid one. Because it's more efficient and effective. And the liquid that I have, there's 2,000 in one drop.
Wow.
So if I'm doing 10,000, I'm just popping 5 little drops into a glass of water or into my juice or into my smoothie. Very easy. Very
cool. And you'll show me how to order those?
Yeah. You probably, you might check your local health food store up there to see what brands you have up there. But,
okay.
I'm sure that the one that we have down here will deliver, I'm sure. Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. So the vitamin D, I want you to make sure, and you'll see this in the six-week detox materials, is that you're following the recommendations for getting your fatty acids in. So it can be
including chia and hemp.
Yeah, and you could actually just, you can make your juice, and you can put some whole chia seed in the juice. And you can make like a slurry out of that. So it'll just taste like the juice, but it'll be kind of thick.
Okay.
And that's very easy to do. And that would be like, you know, a couple of tablespoons of chia in a, you know, 12-ounce or 16-ounce glass of juice.
Sounds gross, but I'll try it.
It's actually not. And, you know, it's a very energizing drink. I'm just reading a book right now called The Born to Run. And this guy is talking about this Indian tribe in South America and how they are these amazing athletes. And he was down with them, and somebody offered him this drink.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's trying to drink it, but he looks at it, he goes, it looks like fish eggs. It's like all these little, and it looks really gross. And, you know, he doesn't know what's in it. And he comes to find out it's chia seed. And as soon as he said that, it looks like fish eggs, I'm like, oh, my God, or frog eggs. Oh, my God, it's chia seeds. They're offering him chia seed. So that was their, quote-unquote, secret food to their amazing athletic prowess.
Right.
And it's very yummy if you do that and you put a little vanilla in it, if you just even just soak the chia in water and put a little bit of vanilla powder and cinnamon in it, it's like a little pudding.
Okay. Cool. Interesting.
And then you can topically, one more thing, you can start doing some hot compresses on it to just try to soften it and allow the inflammation to go down.
Right.
And in the six-week detox, we talk about the anti-inflammatory kind of herbs. The turmeric and the ginger and all. And all those can be juiced right into your juice or blended right into your smoothie or grated on into a salad dressing.
Okay.
And they're yummy.
I'll definitely look at that list, and I'm going to sort of follow up with some comments on the blog. But interesting, I wanted to update the questions and see what some of the people, just see if there were any questions, because sometimes another perspective helps. And one of the questions that came in was asking if the whole salt thing that we talked about, you know, you sort of suggested go ahead and do the salt, and I know for a fact that there's an emotional thing there, because the question was, why wouldn't you put more attention on getting more greens and celery? And the person had said, you know, I would think you'd want to try more natural option first, just curious, because to me it sounds like Tira's not getting enough greens for her personal needs. And I definitely know for a fact that over the last few weeks I've not been getting enough greens. But when I was doing green juices for several days in a row, I would literally pack back 4 heads of celery in a day, and still I wanted salt.
Right.
So,
that's why I said it, and that's exactly
right.
I knew your history and how much green you had been getting.
Yeah, and I was so pumping back the greens, and the only thing that I would want to go and eventually eat at the end of the day was salt. And I know that the fats, I'm getting enough fats because I'm eating coconut, and I'm even eating some olive oil, and I'm even eating lots of avocado, way more than I used to.
Yeah,
but
those aren't the,
not
they
been getting
aren't the essential fats.
Yeah,
okay.
And
all
I know
the fats
that
you're naming are not your essential fats. You cannot make your essential fats without getting them externally, and none of those have significant amounts, if any. Those are all, you're eating monounsaturated fats.
Yeah, and I used to get hemp seeds, and I used to include them in my diet, and I would feel so good. But then I just heard this person say, oh, it's a hoax, this whole omega-3 fatty acid thing, and hemp, you shouldn't be taking it. And so I stopped doing it. But when I was doing it, I felt so good. It was so it's
well,
just
let me
a
ask
reminder.
You, what does that teach you?
Yeah.
What does that teach you about who to listen to?
Well, your body, for me. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And science, too. There's just finding a balance. And it's one thing to trust science. And, you know, like, I think there needs to be a combination of the two. So
yeah. What I like to do.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Is combine ancient healing wisdom, body wisdom, with modern science and come up with conclusions that way. You can't do it either. You can't do it in a vacuum. You can't do science in a vacuum because that's where you get antibiotics and steroids and all kinds of drugs.
Yeah.
You can't do just the healing, the wisdom of your body in a vacuum. If your body is not balanced, it's going to be putting out cravings for things that may not really be what you're needing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of creating balance. And the one thing I did mention that is missing was some of the sea vegetables, which may satisfy some of that craving for minerals, because it may actually not be the salt that you're craving. And kind of like when people crave sugar and they go for candy and they just keep craving sugar. But if they went for an apple, that may take the sugar craving away because there's all this other nutrition in the package.
Mm-hmm.
So same thing with the salt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I find it really interesting. Another thing that I'm just going to come quickly to these questions because there was another one there that I felt was worth addressing. It was asking, I'm wondering why there's so much focus on symptoms and no analysis of Tira's diet. Wouldn't you also want to analyze Tira's daily health habits, including diet and not just symptoms?
Mm-hmm.
And they were expecting that the consultation would be more holistic and probing into everything that Tira's actively doing on a daily basis. And, I mean, I think the questions and the information that I put on the blog says to some degree what I've been doing, but we're also dealing with someone who's been 80 to 90% raw food, and then for the 10 years before that, vegan, vegetarian, macrobiotic.
Exactly.
So at a certain point, we know I'm not consuming Coca-Cola and burgers on the weekend.
Right.
So it's only so far you want to take more dietary changes. And even I think that's what we have done in this, is the idea of, okay, we're going to start adding some of these omega fatty acids and the vitamin D and C vegetables. And so we are, I think it's still very...
Yeah, we are looking at your diet. It's just I think what people are hearing, they're not sitting there with your forms in front of you like I am and in having talked to you and knowing what the diet is like. And oftentimes when I'm talking to somebody who isn't as knowledgeable diet-wise, we're spending most of the time talking about diet. So there's different levels of people. Somebody comes to me and they're in this amazingly impeccable raw diet and they're still having problems. I'm looking at, there's some mechanism at play here. There's some either genetic factor or environmental factor or some long ago, you know, exposure that's created an imbalance that's not allowing you to really detoxify your world. And we need to upregulate that. But, yeah, the diet, to me, I mean, diet is critical. It's the cornerstone, as are the thoughts and the exposure. So the things, as I read through the 12 pages or 15 pages of stuff that you filled out, I get to know you. Had I sat down with you cold without any paperwork on you, boy, we would have been digging through that diet and asking you lots and lots of questions about what you eat then and what you eat then. But when I look at what your diet is, you know, yes, you need to get back to focusing on greens, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did get was, even when you were focusing on greens, you were still having this. So what are the other things at play? So we dug at the chocolate, the late night eating, and I think the fat salt thing, which gets to adrenals. So
interesting. And I know for myself in the elimination, like another of the questions that came up, and for me, you know, it's the whole enema thing. And, okay, I admit I'm probably using it more than I need to, and I said once a week, maybe it's more than that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that for me, putting back fitness in place and proper detox, like sweating, I used to take so much more time for myself to go to yoga or do a hot yoga class or go running. And as I've tried to put in balance with the kids, a good schedule, piano lessons, sleep, a boyfriend, sort of fitness has slipped out, and I try to just keep my fitness functional so I know I'm getting active at least regularly. But I really need to get that detoxifying, sweating, heart rate boosting fitness back into my life. And I think part of what's really important for me with elimination is just the basics of drinking enough water, getting a good sweat going on, and those kinds of things.
And half your body weight in fluid ounces, especially during detox, is what you want to be focusing towards on the water. But can I make a minimum recommendation in terms of the exercise?
Yeah, please.
Okay. At least once a week, that hot sweat, you know, yoga, sauna, something like that. At least once a week, preferably twice a week.
Okay.
And you can do three times a week, even better. The aerobic kind of thing like running, four times a week.
Okay.
Or three, you
so
know,
my
start
little...
with three, but move it up. Okay.
So 1 to 2 times a week of yoga and four
and
times a week
say
of
three
running.
To four times on the you know, running or some kind of aerobics. I know up in Canada at this time of year, running is probably
I'm
pretty miserable.
A winter runner. I actually run much more in the winter than I do in the summer.
Do you really?
So,
oh. Well,
yeah, I'm a great winter runner. I've spent more time running in the winter.
So pick
than
3 days. Start with 3 days. Or start with one day.
How much
time? Start with one day. You know, half an hour.
Yeah, see?
It doesn't have
and, you know,
hours
every Sunday I
time.
Used to run, like, if you can believe it, 32 kilometers, between 21 and 32 kilometers. I would just spend my Sunday and get in a big two-hour run, you know? And even
you can do that
starting,
for fun, but it's not doing your body, you know, it's not really doing much good after the half hour.
No, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And then some weights.
What?
Weight resistance. It doesn't have to be anything major. You don't have to go join a gym. You can buy an exercise band. And I was doing an exercise today where I wrapped the exercise tube around one of the banister, you know, rails on the staircase and just, you know, was pulling at an angle and working, you know, various muscles. Very simple stuff. And I know that you have a fitness planner in your BES program.
Yes, but what do you mean by resistance? Does it have to have a band or?
Well, resistance means weight or body weight, so push-ups.
Yes, squats and things like that.
Squats, especially squats. Yes. If you don't have weights, just pick up a kid and squat with kid. You know, find something around your house, bookends or books or, you know, something that has weight for the squats so that it creates more of a resistance.
Like every day for a few minutes kind of thing?
Well, you know, ideally, you don't want to do weights every day. You want to do them every other day because you want to give your muscles a chance to recuperate unless you're doing different body parts. So say if one day you're doing squats and the next day you're doing lifts with your arms, you can get away with like 10 to 15 minutes a day. You can get away with less than that, and I'm going to tell you how. Look up burst training. If you can do something full out for 30 seconds to a minute, like where at the end of that period, you're just like, I can't lift it again. I can't lift it again. I can't even do this again. And you repeat that. You do 8 of those a day. You can get as good a workout as a 30-minute aerobic exercise workout.
Okay.
And that's 8 minutes.
Burst training, 8 minutes. Oh, man.
Do you have stairs in your house?
Do I have stairs? Nope,
stairs.
I don't. But I can always find torturous hills and things like that.
Because bleachers are great for that. or stairs. You just like run up, run down, run up, run down. I was doing that today with a 15-pound weight in my hand. And it's like, you know, after 30 seconds to a minute, you're just like, I can't do this anymore. That's the intensity you want to get to. When you get to that intensity, it just creates a lot of strengthening and conditioning in your body. So start with one of each. Start with that. Start with one day of running, one day of yoga, one day of burst. And then just get addicted to them and keep them increasing.
Okay, so I'll start with I'll put in my starting targets and then I'll put the goal. And I get it for the vitamin D. I didn't get how much it drops to after 2 weeks, though.
I'd go to 4,000 after 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then after a month, drop it down to 2,000.
After 4 months, you said?
After a month. Because I don't know what your levels are, so I don't want to take a chance of giving you too much because...
I'd micro another cyst or something.
it's not a good thing. You will stress your liver if you do too much.
So from 10,000 to 4,000 to 1,000, you said?
Two. 10, 4, 2.
Okay. And then I get it for the omega fatty acid stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And my goal is to get myself on liquids only, maybe some salads, but I like the challenge of liquids only. I like feeling like I'm getting something severe, you know, because then it feels very serious to
but
me.
If it's too severe, you see, if you let yourself go with that too severe, it gets too hard, you give up.
Yeah, kind of, but I'm also an extremist, so
okay.
Then I can also make it sound very serious. I can say to my boyfriend, I talked to the doctor and she said I have to do this, and they'll be like, oh, he'll be like helping me, you know, if I make it serious, but.
Here's what I would recommend if you want to do it that way you've done lots of juicing before, so you're not like, you know, somebody that's new to this and is going to balk at it. Four days next week. Not the whole seven, just four. 4 days of liquid only.
Okay.
Okay?
Nice. Now, when you say juices, it can be smoothies too, or it should just be juices?
Well, if you want to really jumpstart it, do 4 days of green juices.
Okay.
4 days of green juices to get your six-week detox started.
Okay. So that would be this week, no?
Well, this week's prep week, so, you know, you can start this week if you want, but this week is really the get off the gluten, get off the dairy, get onto green smoothies every day, increase the salads, you know, just kind of a prep week. And next week is when we'll start in earnest with the full-blown.
What percentage of, because I'm still going to be adding, like you said, chia or hemp so that I'm not doing a no-fat juice thing. But what percentage of those juices should I be including fruit in, if at all?
I usually like to keep it to only as much fruit as you need to make the juice palatable.
Okay.
So green apple, a little bit of, you know, a green apple and a quart of green juice would be.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay. And make it a lot of leafy greens. So make it at least half leafy green. I know celery and cucumbers are great and they're liquid, but make it at least half leafy green.
I might have to add another green apple. But
I do kale alone sometimes, but
yeah, but you're hardcore.
I can be hardcore, but
okay.
I don't usually make it past 2 days of juicing because I get bored. I mean, I just don't have the time.
Oh, I totally get it, and I may be hiring some.
Yes,
because
that's
I have a restaurant collaboration thing, so I'm just going to get them on some juice production for me to help me make it happen. But one of the things I just want to say, first of all, and I mean, we've covered a lot of things, and I'm definitely also going to see if I can try and commit to, I'm not being sarcastic here. I'm actually being serious. Commit to going to bed around 10 o'clock and getting up, if I have to get up at work at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning and start my day. But I really need to find a way to, especially if I am alone and I have my kids, then I need to find a way to get to bed earlier. And sometimes I've been doing that, going to bed with the kids at around 9:30 and then getting up at 3 o'clock, and I feel so productive. So in terms of what we've talked about with the late night sleeping and how to create some new habits or patterns or different ways of nourishing myself at that time, getting to bed would be good. But and I think fitness helps, because when you've had a good workout, you're tired. You want to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all balanced here. There's not one piece. Diet isn't it. It's not just emotions. It's not just exercise.
Yeah.
It's not just sunshine. It's, you know, it's all of it put together.
Okay.
And you can't, you got to have the big picture, the whole packet. Otherwise, your body's going to be craving and looking for it.
Okay.
And it won't be balanced. So try some hot compresses on the cyst to just kind of soften it up. And that's just getting, you can just do a washcloth and get the water as hot as you can, or boil some water and then dip the rag in, wait for it to be, you know, deal with manageable temperature, and then put it on the cyst to help it to just evaporate. And then you can do a wheatgrass poultice. If you get the wheatgrass after you've juiced it, and you take the leftover pulp and you put it over that area, and then use a, you know, kind of a gauze or bandage to hold it on there. You can leave it on there for a couple of hours. Wheatgrass poultices can be amazing for stuff like that. It just helps to draw the toxins out.
So I also do have to make sure that I'm looking into the third sort of options for the 6-week detox and following those with the wheatgrass and other things that it suggests. So that's part of it too. And then sea vegetables, I need to put those in somewhere.
Put those in there. Yep.
Okay. So one of the things I'm just going to say as just a comment I find really interesting, I've been working at this myself for 7 years, and obviously doing well enough that I've inspired tens of thousands of other women around the world to try and get on board too. And but I find it so interesting and just... not reassuring, but just it confirms what I already knew, which is we're all in this together, and sometimes in order to motivate ourselves and find the tools we need, we really do need to connect with someone else who not only holds us accountable, but believes in us and knows that we can get through this and supports us through the process. So just this whole experience has really validated for me what I already knew, which is the importance of community and collaboration and calling upon the wisdom of others in our community. And also, it's been just such a validating personal experience for me to stop. And after taking 7 years of doing calls and looking at all the other things I can do to help other people, to just say, okay, whoa, I need to walk the walk, and I want to take the time to commit to my health and put things in place for myself, because we get so busy with the kids, and we get so busy with the business, and we get so busy with the boyfriend, and we get so busy with the in-laws and the parents, and that to stop and say, okay, and the fact that this is an investment, you know, for someone to go out and invest in a consultation and invest in a detox program, it means it's like saying, okay, I'm going to prioritize myself, and when you do make that commitment, then you're just that much more likely to put in place the things you need for yourself. And I can remember when I was in university, it was just so clear to me. I was really struggling with candida and maybe some yeast infections, and I bought a book. And because I'd bought that book, for me, going to university at the time, I was working 2 jobs and studying, so that book was a significant investment. But because I had made that investment, then I took the time and I sat down on the couch and I read it and I created targets for myself and I created a disciplined plan for myself to get what I needed to happen done. And I can feel that same degree of just, okay, it's time for me to invest in myself. And I schedule meetings all day long and I schedule projects all day long, and now I'm going to put into the schedule my yoga class, and I'm going to put into the schedule time and money to make sure that I'm getting the greens that I need and the juices that I need. And if I need help with the juices, I'm either going to ask someone or hire someone or do what I need to do to prioritize my health. So,
great.
Just, you know, yeah, I can feel that the whole experience is really validating and inspiring and exciting, and I needed to do this for myself to make sure that moving into the 6-week detox, I'm clear. And I think I'd written 3 words, and I don't even know what they were, but it ended with committed, you know, and I'll find them. Do you remember those ones? Informed, inspired, and committed.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, and I almost have tears in my eyes. But I just really want to thank you for being so committed yourself, so that you can inform and inspire other people. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for just for how you know, your willingness in sharing this information and for the care that you take in addressing more than just, you know, you're not just trying to book another consultation. You're really looking to get the whole picture and support the whole person, and I think it's fabulous. So I'm excited.
Yay! And will you do something for me? Talking about accountability, will you, as soon as you've got your exercise, you'll look at your calendar and you're going to fit it in, and you just email me those dates that you've got.
Well, my calendar is, my calendar is public because 7 different people access it. So I can even give you access to my calendar and you can see the hour that I've booked
it
in.
Okay, good, good. And then I'll send you an email afterwards and say, did you do it? How was it? Tell me how the yoga class went. Because I know when you were doing that yoga class, I remember you were blogging about how you were doing the yoga class every day. And you were just so, I mean, you were dedicated.
Yeah.
You were so dedicated to doing that.
Oh, it became my new religion. Yeah, it was just like, it was so
good.
So
make that commitment again that you're going to do it. You know, it doesn't have to be every day. And it
but 2 days a week is fair.
2 days
you know?
A week is doable.
Especially maybe 2 days a week I don't have my kids and one day the week I do have my kids or something like that would be a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I'm inspired and I'm grateful, and I definitely want us to do a follow-up thing. So I'll be blogging about the six-week detox and some of the choices and things that I'm doing, and what I thought we could do is, you know, book another follow-up consultation so we can just, which is another element of accountability, to just say, okay,
yes,
so
absolutely.
I'm going to invite 30,000 people to listen to my confessional in 6 weeks. And it's awfully motivating, but it's not why I'm doing it. It's also just to share in the process, because I know many of us at different stages make commitments to our health and to health improvements and just life improvements of different kinds. And, you know, I think it just it's a valuable thing to share the process and get us on board as a community. So
absolutely. And you've made a commitment, and talking about accountability, look at how many people you're accountable to now.
You
can get emails from people that you don't even know saying, hey, Tara, how you doing? Did you get your yoga in this week?
Well, and
how many green juices did you have?
Yeah, and part of the reason that I'm doing it, too, is because I know that I'm not alone. And just some of the questions that come in, it's so clear that so many of us are struggling with the same things.
Yes.
So I know that there will be lots of people who benefited from this call and who may never say anything and may have no vested interest in my well-being or my process at all, but will have heard something that they needed to take the next step forward in their health. And that's why I think it's really valuable that we put this information out there. And I know you've seen it as much as I have, that there are people out there who preach a path but are not always forthcoming about the struggles. And it's kind of an intimidating process when you decide to put yourself out there.
Yes.
But I think what's really valuable about this is just the transparency of saying, you know, we're in this together, not to preach a right way, but to find solutions.
Exactly.
When
something that's
going
to work for you. And I think that that's a very, very important point you made, because when we put out there like, well, you know, I'm not having a struggle. Everything's easy for me. I'm not having any struggles. Then people feel even more ashamed or like something's wrong with them because they are struggling. And really, indeed, and you know what my struggles are. It's going to bed. I preach about sleep. I preach about sleep. I eat well, and you know, I exercise well. But you know, I don't always go to bed the way I'm supposed to. And you know, I may not be feeling it now, but it definitely is going to take a toll on my body if I'm not careful. So we all have our little things that we just need to have some accountability to.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm
all right.
Full steam ahead on the 6-week detox with you, and I'll follow up with blog posts to just sort of outline a little, you know, a few of the things that we've discussed, but of course we'll keep the juicy details on the call.
You're right.
And, yeah, I mean, why don't we just end by, on the main page, I've given people access to your website and your resources. I know for sure there's access to a page with lots of your e-books and stuff, but why don't you just give us information on how people who might have listened to this and want more specific information for themselves be able to, I mean, the 6-week detox is available, and people who take the VIP version can get a lot of one-on-one support with you and with me for some of the more life coaching things. But how about other people who would just like to connect with you for a coaching consultation?
Well, there's a number of ways you can do it, and I'm revamping my whole coaching structure. There's a few out on my website on a page. I think it gave you the link to it. It's healthcoachingprograms.php, drritamarie.com/healthcoachingprograms.php. But if you also, there's just some new things that I've just included. Like some people don't necessarily want to do this full thing that you just did. Mm-hmm. And I'm offering an initial, if somebody wants to just get on the phone and talk to me for 10 minutes and ask me some questions, or 20 minutes and ask me some questions, that those are available too. And what I can do is I can, I don't even have a link to it yet because I just created it the other day, but I can get that to you and you could put it in the blog if you want to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely,
yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah, because that's a way that, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you know, get invested in doing all the intensity of it. But for those of you who are really ready to make the next step and you know that you're just either stuck or you don't know where to turn or you really do want to know what's going on, I seem to be doing all these great things for myself and yet I'm not getting very far, what's going on, then definitely a private consultation would be great. But also I have another program that is starting in another week, which is more geared towards it's just, you know, kind of doing it yourself, kind of assessing yourself and learning how to look at a questionnaire about yourself and see where some of the deficiencies lie and guide you through it. So I'll get you information about that too, because I haven't written the sales letter yet, and it's starting in a week. But we've already got 40 people signed up for it, so we're and people are real excited about it because we're going to be doing labs, because not everybody knows how to get their doctors to do labs, and we're going to be analyzing those. So,
mm-hmm.
But go to drfreedomree.com and sign up for any one of my. Oh, go to the gluten one. DrRitaMarie.com, click on gluten-free. You'll get all the information about gluten, which we were talking to before, and then you'll be on my list to get access to when I announce these new services. So.
Perfect.
All right.
Good stuff. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will be definitely hearing a lot from each other in the six, seven, or eight weeks
yep.
to come.
Absolutely.
Yes.
The eight-week, well, six-week detox program.
Yes, and I'll definitely keep the blog updated with cyst progress and other exciting news. So
yes,
thanks,
please
again.
Do. And measure. Do measure if you can get someone to actually take a ruler, a yardstick.
Only one person I'd let get close to take a ruler. But
yeah, and just measure it. Have them measure it for you and just kind of write it down and then measure it again in 2 weeks and measure it again, because that's really the best way to do it, not by guessing. Oh, I think it's smaller.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Sounds good. I've got my work cut
Wonderful.
Out for me.
All okay, right.
Have a great night. And
you
thank
too.
You very much to everybody who listened in and joined us.
Great. Take
Bye.
Care. Bye.
Bye.